not good at this long hair thing. You have to be a teenager. Well, I now have the honor of introducing our speaker tonight. This gentleman has been an integral part of my recovery and has been an inspiration and support for me for now 4.5 years. He was faster than me. He got to Ridgeview first, and he graduated before me, but he was still hanging around. And I think some days I feel like I've caught up, other days not so much. He has, this is a landmark presentation because most often the presentations at the First Friday speaker meeting are given to us by people in recovery from alcoholism or addiction. But there's a fairly significant group of people that graduate from Ridgeview with psychiatric diagnoses who work the recovery program. And Don will be the second person to present at First Friday speaker meeting from the psych program. Don's story is a compelling one. It was one of the very big turning points in my recovery while I was still in Ridgeview, and I heard the earlier version. You will be listening to a man who has earned wisdom, tolerance, and acceptance while walking on burning ground. He has done this with grace and patience and kindness. His story is told with candor and honesty. Please welcome my dear friend, Don P.
Thank you, Linda. I really appreciate that. She didn't tell me what she was going to say, but I appreciate that. And I also wanted to tell Marcus, I don't believe he's here. I appreciate his, he made an announcement on the internet today about this meeting, and he had some kind words in that he said the 2 years that I was gone that I resided in North Carolina. Some of you will see it was not exactly residing, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. My name is Don, and in honor of Dolphus, I'm an old-fashioned throwback depressed person. On May the 9th, 2006, I had an unsuccessful suicide attempt. Actually, I was kind of really depressed, even worse after that for a few days. On May 16th, 2006, I was admitted to Ridgeview. I was diagnosed with a mental illness and in a sense certified as mentally ill. On December 2nd, 2010, I took a test and passed and was certified by the state of Georgia as a certified peer specialist. What that means is that I get now to work with the mentally ill. So what we're talking about is a 4.5 year recovery story. Went from being diagnosed as mentally ill, still am diagnosed as mentally ill, still am certified as mentally ill, but now I'm able to work. I've been certified to work with the mentally ill. So this is what I call the recovery story. It's an ongoing story. It's got a lot more to go, I hope. At my age, I'm not sure, but we hope it's got a lot more to go. There is an illness story, and that's what we're going to have to also talk about. But as I say, the main thing is we're looking, recovery does work. And I've made it through so far and hope to continue. I kind of take those words from Rascal Flatt and say, God bless the broken road that led me here, and I hope it continues. Let me just, a couple of things. this spool up here. I hope y'all, it is, I didn't know if any of you noticed it, it is a part of the story. It's not what Linda actually is. It's a spool of used toilet paper. It is not what Linda thinks of my story, but it is a part of my story, along with this spork. Anyway, and, you know, I've got some notes to go by. Anybody at my age, we have these senior moments, and I may just come to a stop here in a minute, have to think a minute, so just bear with me. And I'm going to use this stool. I know Kurt gave me some words on how not to use it after his time with it a few 2 months ago, but we'll see how it goes. Okay, as Linda said, this is the second time somebody that, through the psych program has done the first Friday. And there's some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that with depression and psych, there's not a whole lot of the drinking stories. There's not quite all that laughter, so it might be a little long while we sit in here tonight. Matter of fact, last night at Sam's alumni group, Sam asked me, he says, "Have you made up your story yet?" I said, "No, but I've been trying to glamorize it all day." And I thought about that, but there's not a whole lot of glamour you can put on it. So, unfortunately, y'all are going to have to just sit through the whole thing. The good news, though, is that somebody at my age, my bladder won't let me stay up here but so long, so it won't go but so far. As y'all can tell by my accent, I was born in Newark, New Jersey. Actually, you can also look at my age. I am a pre-baby boomer. My father was in the FBI during World War II, let's get that one right. And he was stationed in New York. And I was actually born in Newark, New Jersey. Now, my father and I have two things in common on that. We're both in the FBI files. He's in there as a former agent. I mean, there as a felon, but you know that's the way it goes sometimes. I'm kind of made a history of being the black sheep of the family, but we just have to go there. I was born in Newark, but we went pretty quickly. My parents moved back to Benson, North Carolina. It's a small town, really small town, southeast of Raleigh, about 30 miles. And I spent the next 60 years in Benson, North Carolina. So that was my home until 2006. I have a sister who lives here in Atlanta. That's how I ended up down here, part of the reason. My father was an alcoholic, although he recovered pretty quickly. My sister, on the other hand, is a 24-year recovering alcoholic. She also suffers from depression, and I think that's part of her problem. Her medicine cabinet looks like a pharmacy, and I think she's one of the few persons, if she'd have come here 24 years ago to Ridgeview, she'd have probably saved money coming here rather than all the money she's had to spend. I never knew anybody that would save money coming to Ridgeview, but she may have. I grew up there in that small town, and my grandfather was a lawyer in that town. My father was a lawyer in that town, and I eventually became a lawyer in that town. So it's a little bit of a couple of generations there. I went to school through a small town, went to the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, and then went to the law school in Chapel Hill. I'm not sure how I did all these things because the depression, I don't think I ever knew I had depression, at least early on. But I always seemed to be off in another world. Never could seem to keep up with right where I was. It just seemed like I had a parallel world. And my grades and everything else seemed to reflect that. I made it through Carolina, through 4 years of Carolina before I actually found the library. Somehow made it. I don't think I got a 2.0 until I was a senior. And then somehow made it into the law school. But during that time in law school, I'm older than most of you. The Vietnam draft was in effect, and I got drafted and spent 2 years in the Army. I was very lucky, though. I did not have to go to Vietnam, although I was on a levee one time, and lucky did not make it. Matter of fact, and it has had a little bit of an effect even now when I use the VA hospital some now and VA clinics. And when I'm in there, I feel a little bit of survivor's guilt that I didn't go. And that the other guys are in there, and I can look at them, most of my age, just about all of them did go to Vietnam. So a little bit of a guilt that I made it through and did not have to go. And I think that contributed some to the depression. I had a pretty good life. I married a girl that her sister was a Miss North Carolina, and frankly she was better looking. But I had a good marriage. I had mostly a good marriage. It lasted 36 years, as a matter of fact. We had one son. And I had a decent life, but somehow I just never could connect with it. The depression, as I say, at that point I just didn't realize what depression was. I thought that was a normal life. I just could not stay in the moment. I always seemed to be off somewhere else. As a matter of fact, when my son was a junior in high school, he was a pretty good basketball player. For example, opening game that season, he scored like 15 points in the first half. And I'm talking with a couple of friends at halftime. And I said, you know, it doesn't get any better than this. This is the greatest thing. By the end of the game, I was thinking, now, he's a junior. He's even going to be better next year. And my point is, I couldn't even enjoy what I really wanted to see. There I was watching him have a great game, and I was already planning for his next year. I just didn't seem to ever be able to stay that focused. I painted a good picture. I was citizen of the year in the town. Now, let me say, this is all big fish, small pond. I mean, I don't want to paint it any bigger than that. This was a very small town. It didn't take much to get these things. My son's team won the state. I was coach on the state little league championship team, and everything, it was what looked like a pretty good life. But all along, I was just not staying as involved, and somehow missing it. And later I found out part of it is the depression, and just stayed in another world. I allowed that to move over into the business area. I was a lawyer, practiced law in North Carolina for 34 years. I was a real estate lawyer and an estate lawyer. And the reason that's important is that in the real estate law, you have trust accounts. That means you handle a lot of money on a lot of big loans. And in the late 90s and early 2000, that was really big because we were closing enough loans that we were running $1 to $2 million a month through the trust account. Now, at some point I made some major mistakes. As I had, I'm not going to blame this on the depression. I was doing things where I wasn't staying nearly as attentive to it as I should have. But it still, I knew what in the hell I was doing. But I made some mistakes on a couple of estates. And at some point, I made some bad choices. One of those choices was to move some of the money out of the trust account over to pay off some of the problems in those estates. Yeah, there's no question I'm taking the full blame. I did that. Depression didn't have a damn thing to do with it. Some of the things that happened after that, I can handle it. I can get it all back. I can take care of everything. Well, reality and what I was thinking I could do were not the same thing. Things just got worse. And then the depression did have a major part of what happened then, of how bad it got. I just more and more got away from reality and just I existed in another world. Each day, where everybody now says one day at a time, I was saying, just get me through this day. I don't care if I can get through one more day, survive one more day without that phone call from the bank wanting to know why that trust account's overdrawn. I allowed it to get worse because eventually I thought I could solve it. Just like we all think we can solve our own problems, I thought I could solve it. But eventually I think I knew I couldn't. So I came up with my plan. I had a fair amount of life insurance. So I made the rational decision that the one way out of this was suicide. I could take the $1 million worth of life insurance, could come in and pay off the problems with the trust account, and it could also leave my family with money to help them go forward. And it seemed very rational. I was going to be, actually in my mind, I was going to be the hero. I was going to save my family. I was going to get them out of a mess, and nobody would ever know about it. Insurance pays off the money. Nobody ever knows. Everything's fine. I'm the hero to them. But, you know, at that time it seemed very reasonable. But and after getting to Ridgeview, you look at it, what it was pretty selfish and pretty cowardly. I was taking the easy way out. Just going to take that way out. I was selfish. And it was a coward. I didn't want to face all the ramifications that came with it, all the consequences. And I can tell you those are bad consequences because I eventually did face them. But it was my way to get out and solve everything. The depression had finally, reality had just finally gone. I was no longer not in control of anything. All I wanted to do was just make it one more day. Finally, that call came from the bank. There was no way. I made it over a year and a half. Actually, I'm pretty good with numbers. Not good enough, obviously. But I made it over a year and a half figuring ways to juggle and make it. But everything kept crashing down. And as I say, I take full blame nothing on the depression. I do blame the depression on allowing things to really spiral out of control. And so the call came. For once in my life, it's amazing. I had the sloppiest desk you could ever imagine. Couldn't find anything. When the call came, I spent the first 30 minutes straightening up my desk. It's kind of like I wanted it in place. I went out, and my plan was, since I wanted it to look like an accident, I needed that for two reasons. I wasn't 100% sure what the insurance would do. although I later found out it wouldn't matter. I had had it long enough. But I wanted it to look like an accident for the insurance company, and I wanted it to look like an accident for my family and for everybody else, so that they would not have to face the embarrassment or humiliation. So I planned that part pretty well. I figured, too, that I wanted to be sure it looked like an accident, and I wanted to be sure it was successful. So I was afraid, for an accident, I thought a motor vehicle was the best way. So I thought I needed this thing not only to be, I just couldn't drive it straight into something, so I wanted it, I wasn't sure if that would succeed. So I decided to drive it into a river. If the crash didn't kill me, then I could drown. I had a place in mind, and it was down in the bottom. It was on a Tuesday, and that weekend we'd had a heavy rain. Let me say, North Carolina creeks and rivers, at least eastern North Carolina, are unlike what you have around here. They aren't really wide, but they're deep. We have mostly clay and sand, so they cut. It's not like the Chattahoochee out here that's only, it's wide, but it's not overly deep. But it was in the bottom of a hill. The first time down the hill, somebody was coming the other way, so I had to go circle around again. Second time down the hill, nobody was coming, but I couldn't do it. I think I thought of my son, a lot of thoughts went through my mind. Third time down the hill, I said, damn it, you got to do it. And I just said to myself, do it. So I ran it off the right side of the road so it looked like I went off, and then whipped it back to the left, went flying into to the river. Matter of fact, the highway patrolman that investigated really thought, he was going to charge me with DUI until they got back the drug test from the hospital. But I go flying into the river. And there's just a momentary lapse of memory. The next thing I know, I'm sitting there. There's smoke all around me. And it's just smoke, and I'm still sitting here, and I'm not. I've had this big thud, and there's smoke. I think my first thought was that with all this smoke, that I had bypassed the judgment, and I'd already gone to hell. just burning. But what it actually was, the airbags had gone off, and then the smoke was there, and so. I was driving a Tahoe. I could give Chevrolet a good commercial on survivability. Tahoe hit, the hood was all bent up. But other than that, I'm sitting there with smoke. My back's hurting. I did fracture a part of my back. And nothing else. You know, I don't know if y'all have ever seen The Bourne Supremacy. In that movie, the Jeep goes right in, goes right straight to the bottom. Not in this case. I'm sitting there floating down this creek. And it's not where I wanted to be. I mean, I was at this point, I was kind of disappointed. Not disappointed. I mean, I was facing a hell of a mess. And I'm sitting there floating down a creek. And what's so crazy, it floated about 400 or 500 feet. As I say, it had rained that weekend, and it was moving pretty fast. And it was, as I say, it was a Tahoe, and it did start filling up slowly. And I didn't plan it real well because I had part of my windows up. I don't know why I did that, but I should have had them all down. But anyway, I still, in my mind, I still had my seatbelt on. I thought, well, it's going to go down, and it'll still get me. Well, the back of the Tahoe lands up on the bank. So, and at that time, this was fairly isolated area, but someone had been, there was a road tile place right up from there, and someone had actually seen it go in. And so as it's starting to sink, and I'm still got my mind, the water's starting to come up, and I'm got my mind that, you know, this is still going to work. Well, along comes the rescue squad. And it, by this time, it had gotten up to about my chest. And as they got in and started trying to get it up, for some reason, they could not get into the back. And that's the part was on the bank, and we're sinking in the front. And eventually, it got up to my chin. And at that time, I heard one of the rescue squad guys say, I'm going in to see if we can get him out of the front. And at that point, I knew there was no way that I could let that happen, because something could happen to him, and then I'd really have a guilt trip to go. So I just undid the seatbelt, crawled through the back. It was a Tahoe with the barn doors, and went out the back. So I'm still sitting there in a hell, you know, nothing had changed except I had failed at this. But I eventually ended up in a hospital in Raleigh, and that was on May 9, 2006. And nobody knew. That night my son came, my ex-wife came, and in the hospital there in Raleigh, and everybody thought it was an accident. I think everybody did. I'm not sure they did. But next day I had two lawyer friends come in. I told them the whole story. I had my son came in. I told him the whole story. And my ex-wife came in. I told her the story. This was not easy, but I knew it had to be done. So eventually the North Carolina State Bar Lawyers Assistance Team, they made a suggestion that I either go to a place in Williamsburg or to a rehab center here in Atlanta, which was Ridgeview. My sister lived in Suwanee, so I ended up here. Now let me say, I was not one of these that really wanted to be here. I, at this point, I still wanted to be dead, because I had a lot of things facing me and didn't have the courage. Of course, the problem was there was going to be no insurance to solve the problem now. So, but I came here. I spent 77 days here, and for the first 2 weeks, really despised it and really wanted to get, you know, find a way to make my original plan work. But at that point, eventually, it the Ridgeview took and realized that it doesn't matter. You've got all these problems. Life is still pretty special, and that I needed to work at it, and I learned here how to stand up to these problems. I'm not stand up, but at least accept them. You know, they were there, and I had to deal with them. And I couldn't have dealt with them before, but Ridgeview gave me the things that I needed. After 77 days here, I returned to North Carolina for about a week, and my lawyer up there thought it's best that I come back down here. So I came back. Spent and started living with my sister, and spent the next year and a half here in aftercare, with, you know, here at Ridgeview, and progressed pretty well, I think. Linda and I, that's where I met Linda, in the small group in aftercare, in the psych program. And, you know, I think I was making some progress, but Linda was always reminding of one thing. We would talk, I would tell all these things that I'm doing, or and get into the conversation. Linda kept saying, when are we going to talk about the elephant in the room? And that's the consequences. You know, we all come in here with a lot of problems, and we stay in this cocoon for a while, but eventually you got to get back out. And the rest of the world hadn't changed, and there were consequences. And then these were pretty damn big consequences. Eventually, after a year and a half, I had to go back to North Carolina and deal with the court system. And part of that having to deal with it meant, I remember calling Linda and saying, Linda, this was in April of 2008, Linda, that elephant has moved. And that meant that the DA's office in North Carolina had made some moves. And in the long run, what it meant was that I had to go back to North Carolina and face the music. Now, let me say one thing. The one thing that I really think that helped me about Ridgeview is that I had two bottoms. I had the bottom that sent me through the suicide, then I had the bottom that hit me next. And that was 18 months in prison, in a minimum security prison in North Carolina. I was lucky in that sense, it was minimum security. I can remember having to deal with that. I think at that point, humiliation is not a good word. This gets beyond humiliation. Especially in one sense, I had spent 30 some years in that courthouse. And on June 30th, 2008, I had to go back, have my family sit, or my son in particular, sitting there with me, and then deal with the court sentencing, having to go out of there, knowing I wouldn't see him again for a while, and going back into the jail. And it is a humiliating time to face every. And I knew just about all the court personnel that were there. So it was not one of those good days. But eventually, I ended up going to a minimum security prison in Asheboro, North Carolina. I think at that point, let me just say, I was moved to an old prison camp in Asheboro. It was, I would say that one was probably built in the 1920s. This was July. I walked into that camp, 98 degrees, walk into this old building, and I thought I had gone to hell again. I mean, here we are, as hot as it can be. You got about 80 guys sitting in there in their boxer shorts and a few big fans. There is no air conditioning, and so I thought, here's hell again. But I did have Ridgeview. I had this part of Ridgeview that had helped me deal, you know, it made me about as prepared as I could be. I had just written down a couple of things looking in there. You know, they take all of your clothes, every bit of it. This is humiliation to the nth degree. I think there's a few that have been through this, and hopefully not many. And they take everything you've got. The food is terrible. I ate 540 days of processed turkey. Let me say, North Carolina's found out that turkey will go into anything. It goes into turkey hot dogs, turkey hamburgers, turkey spaghetti. Everything has got at least 60% of its turkey. The hot dogs gobble when you look at them. And the food was terrible. I'd say there was no air conditioning. And if you think hot Atlanta's bad, try Central North Carolina in July and August. It's really bad. You never got to sleep in a dark room. They keep the lights on all the time. I mean, they darken it some, but they have to keep lights on enough so that they can see what you're doing. And you can also see what somebody else is doing. That's helpful to know, too. And I think when you look at it, the worst thing about it, though, is it is as totally lonely as it can get. There were 240 some other inmates there, but it's as totally lonely as you can get. And let me say, 540 days, you say that, it doesn't sound too bad. It was 2 4th of July's, 2 Labor Days, 2 Thanksgivings, and almost 2 Christmases. It's a long damn time. And the best thing I can say about it right now, it's over. But I bring those things up just to say it was awfully, awfully bad. But the best thing is I was able to survive it. And what I learned at Ridgeview and what I learned in aftercare and what I learned from people here had a great deal to do with that. I got out a year ago on the 21st of December and came back. There's one thing I knew I wanted to do when I got out. It was come back to Ridgeview. And I've done my best to stay pretty involved with the, you know, there were times when I was here before and I had that Saturday morning professionals group. I didn't always want to get up. I haven't missed one since then except when I've been out of town. When I was there, all I could think about, if I ever get a chance, I want to be in that group again. I'm not going to miss it. I'm not going to miss any Thursday night, and I've done my best not to. Things become much more valuable to you, little things. Time, it becomes a lot more valuable to you. And actually, we're all going through that in one way or the other. It's just that prison really emphasizes it. You really appreciate what you got. And I've really appreciated the last year. As a matter of fact, in the middle of this month, I would have been back here in Atlanta for a year. So I have really enjoyed this year. There are a couple of things that I think that were important to me in this journey of recovery. And I think I have made a good recovery. I'm relatively normal now. Probably about as much as it was before. In December of 2007, at the end of the year, Linda had a New Year's gathering. It actually was about a day or two before that. And Linda doesn't put it on, you've got to bring something. She had this little boxes we had to do and come up with what we were going to do about recovery the next year. I mean, we just can't have a Happy New Year. We got to do a few things. So, as usual, I put it off to the last minute and did something that day. But I came upon the word acceptance. Little did I know how important that word was going to be to me for the next year and a half. 2 years, I guess. Acceptance is one of those words, you know, we say the Serenity Prayer all the time. Help me, you know, to accept the things I cannot change. Well, there was a hell of a lot I couldn't do about changing there. And as a matter of fact, it's my whole life. I couldn't change what had got me to that. I'm proud of some of the things in my life, and I'm certainly not proud of what happened to get me there. But it was there. There wasn't a thing I could do about it. So I'm sitting there. Acceptance became a very important word. I had that choice to either keep my attitude the way it has been, that I'm a victim. You know, when you go through this, I don't care if you deserve it, which I did. I still felt like a victim. I don't deserve to have to do all this. I'm being treated poorly, and frankly, we were treated pretty damn bad. But I can keep that attitude that, you know, I'm the victim. I don't deserve all these things, and damn, why is all this happening to me? Or you can change your attitude, accept where you are, and that's what I did. I accepted that this was it. This was a sorry place to be. It was about as bad as it could be. And I tried to deal with it with as much dignity as I could. I had a job there as an orderly. I looked after between 4 to 7 patients. This was, I hate to skip around, but this place was called the Boneyard. And it was called the Boneyard because there were nothing but old people there, mostly. And that's how I fit in. But we had a lot. It was also a medical camp, and therefore I looked after from 4 to 7 patients at the time. But that got me out about 4 months early. I got the good time. But what we were talking about was 500 straight days of work. There were no days off. I had one day off. I had to have some nose surgery. Had skin cancer and had to have nose surgery. And in that, they took me over to Raleigh. And if you ever want to, Raleigh is the central prison, is the maximum security prison for North Carolina. And for one, the only time I ever know I appreciated Asheboro Prison is after I went over to Raleigh and went through Central Prison. It had, in prison, there are green clothes or minimum security, brown clothes or medium and maximum security. Well, they were all brown clothes over there at Central Prison except for the red jumpsuits. And when I saw those guys coming by, I really felt appreciation because those were the guys on death row. So it was quite a sobering experience to go over there. But let's say I spent 500 straight days working every day, but it made me appreciate more. And then get back to acceptance. I could accept where I was and go forward. And I think that's our whole thing. Now, you can accept, we're all here for some reason, and you can't change it, and you can accept how you got here, and you can't change that part, but you do have a choice, and that's that choice in serenity prayer, and you have a choice on how you're going to deal with it. And so far, I'm fairly pleased with the way I dealt with it there. I survived. I would not have survived without some of that. Another thing that I dealt with over there was living in the moment. I dealt with that here too, but it never became so precious as it did there. I never was able to deal in the moment for most of my life, but you had visitation every Sunday. Now, you didn't have them all the time, but if somebody could come see you, they could come on a Sunday. They could have 2 hours. And if they came from as far away as Atlanta, they could have 4 hours. So the first time my son and daughter-in-law came, I was totally in the moment. I had tears in my eyes, and it was just one of those times where life was, you know, everything was going on. I lived in the moment while they were there. I enjoyed it. I just knew where I was and knew what was happening. I had 3 friends from high school that used to come. They came 7 or 8 times, and we had the best time, and I was in the moment there. I mean, we would swap some of the toys. You would have think we were all the biggest studs when we came through high school, which we weren't, but we kind of improvised and we embellished our life from back then. And the other thing, we're all in our 60s, so I know they were there one time, and for an hour, we all talked about our ailments. Here we are, I need 2 hours of them, and all we want to talk about is how old we are and how we're hurting and everything. I finally said, guys, we spent an hour of this precious time talking about our ailments. But then I was very fortunate. Linda and Virginia came up to see me from here 7 times. They were able to stay 4 hours when they came. They would have to go out for a 30-minute break and then come back in. But that's when I really learned what in the moment was. They would come. They came, we would be able to hold hands, we'd be able to laugh, we'd be able to cry, be able to just look at each other. But for that 4 hours, there's nowhere else in this world I'd rather be. It may have been in a prison, but I learned what it was like to have them there and to be in the moment and enjoy it. There's nothing. And I also had we had psychiatrists and I had a Senior moment. Therapist. I had a therapist. And he was actually a PhD therapist from Duke. Now, he was good, but if you know a Carolina person, having somebody from Duke is hard to deal with. But he was really good, and we dealt with in the moment, and he taught me some things. In the moment is not just, to me, I had to be up at 5:30, 6 o'clock every morning, so I saw the sunrise every day for 500 and some days. And the sky is actually very beautiful in the mornings. It's very beautiful in the afternoons. And I would carry my patient up to the mess hall, come back, and the colors had changed. The clouds would be one color when I went and another when I came back. And I really started being in the moment and enjoying that. And in the moment when they came. And I thought in the moment, in my mind, was those great times that you want to remember. But he told me that in the moment is all the time. It's the good times and it's the bad. And that's the one thing I had never done very well, was be in the moment when things were not going well. I would go off somewhere else. I'd let my mind get away, get to another place. I mean, in the moment is when things are going wrong. And that's what I have done much better. That taught me a lot about that. Ridgeview and prison taught me a lot about being in the moment and living it when things are going bad. Instead of escaping to drugs, instead of escaping to alcohol or in the psych people's, instead of escaping to another place or just saying, I'm going to sleep this day through. By living in the moment when things are going bad and being able to deal with it, life becomes much more manageable. You know, I certainly found the bad parts of life, the times that aren't good. But if you can deal with them then the rest of life is pretty good. And you can even make life in prison be half decent at times if you can deal with it at that time and find those good things. Another thing I found out, consequences. There are consequences to everything we do. And it's funny because we seem to have to pay for those consequences when you're sober, when you're off the addiction, when you've gotten better with depression. But they're still there. You have to deal with those consequences. My big consequence was having to go to prison for those 18 months. But I think we've all learned to deal with them. The ones that I've had the hardest with, though, are those, I call those that consequence. It's those unintended consequences. It's what I did to my son. It's what I did to my ex-wife. It's what I did to my friends, those people that had faith in me. I think all of us think when we're doing this, we're the only one involved. When you're drinking, when you're taking the drugs, when I was doing my problem, my issues, a little recovery language there. When we tend to think we're the only one that it affects, but you know, I really messed up a lot of people's lives. Now, luckily, they were also good people. That brings me around to my other one, support. I've been very, very fortunate. I did some things that my family, my son, my friends didn't really approve of, but they did not stop caring for me. They didn't stop loving me. And part of the reason that I never asked for their help was I thought I was going to disappoint them so bad they wouldn't care, they wouldn't love me. I found out different. And I think most of y'all find that out when you're dealing with these people. That your family, your friends, even though you're in here, they may not approve of what you've done to get here, but they don't abandon you. They're always there. And the support has been amazing. I just never dreamed it. I'm like all the rest of us. I could control everything. I could manage it. I didn't need any damn help. Well, if I'd asked for that help If I'd have gone to the large assistance program back when they were offering help, I might not have been as bad. If I'd have gone to friends, I could have at least cut the severity of this. But we're all so damn independent, we don't want that help. We don't ask. But that support is there, and I've learned that we've got to go out there and get it. I had family that came to see me in prison. I had friends that came. And one of the places I had some of the best support, and I'm going to say with Sam here, and the rest of you is the Ridgeview alumni group. I got, which is unusual in prison, on one day I got 16 letters. Everybody else in that camp, I for at least a little bit, everybody else there knew who I was because I got more mail than probably the rest of the camp that day. And there's nothing more valuable than a letter there. I got a lot of mail. I got a lot of people that continued to let me know. And I'm so very thankful for that. And the other thing is, and those that are in the group know, some of you don't know, let me just say what they did. Every Thursday night at Sam's alumni group, they have a check-in. Well, there's anywhere around 75 to 100 people there on any Thursday night, and it takes about 20 minutes to check in. Well, being the good Methodist that I am, I always sit at the back. We call it kind of the depression corner. And so it was usually somewhere between 6:45 and 6:50 that I would check in. Well, I don't know who did it. I got my ideas. But somebody in that group decided that at 6:50 every Thursday night, they needed to have a moment. I think they called it Don's moment. And so I was told about that through Linda, Virginia. And so every Thursday night at 6:50, I knew somebody cared about me. And at least 75 to 100 people did. I don't know if it, I know it meant a hell of a lot to me. And I'm sure some of them didn't know. They didn't know who in the heck it was they were thinking about. But some people, it's just whether you know them, it's knowing you're giving some thought, you're giving some time. And that was a very valuable thing for me. I very much appreciate it. Matter of fact, when I came back, one of the biggest anxieties I had was going back in there to Sam's group because there was at least a year and a half's worth of people that had started, that had gone to Ridgeview since I'd been there, that didn't have a clue who in hell Don Parker was. And they'd been having a moment for him. And here I am, a short, fat old man, walking in there, and I'm really worried that they're going to say, "Why? This is what we've been spending all our time on." And it did. I was a little worried about that. Now, they've had one other moment, and that was for Courtney. Now, I'm sure Courtney, for y'all that know Courtney, did not have to worry about that anxiety on the looks part. I mean, she's so she didn't have to worry about what people said when she came back. But the support, it was wonderful. I mean, I could not have made it, and I've been blessed. Life has had it's been a broken road, and it's not gone the way I wanted it to necessarily. But right now, to be honest, I am in a recovery period. It's been 4.5 years recovery, and I hope it's another 14 and a half, or I don't want to go too far. I mean, but I hope it's going to be a pretty good while. And life is good. It's not great, but thanks to Ridgeview, thanks in some part to prison, you know, pretty much I think I can deal with most of life now. And I have my bad days like all of us, but I've learned a lot of things about trying to deal with this. And the thing I know is recovery works. You got to work at it, and it's going to have a lot of bumps. I think the thing that I always like to go back to, another song is Garth Brooks, "The Dance," and it goes, "I could have missed the pain, but I would have had to miss the dance." And let me just say this. This dance for the last 4.5 years has had its bad parts, but it's been wonderful. And I wouldn't, you know, life for me right now is as good as it's been. And the recovery, I hope, is going to continue. And I just hope that the recovery for everybody is going to go as well. But you do have to work at it. And so I did go to the University of North Carolina. I kind of like to leave this. University of North Carolina has a little fight song, and it goes, "I'm a Tar Heel born, I'm a Tar Heel bred, and when I die, I'll be a Tar Heel dead, and I'll also be a proud Ridgeview alumni." Thank you. I'll take just one more minute. The spool. I do want to say that. Linda reminded me. The spork. I will say two things. The spork, I don't know if y'all know what a spork is. In prison, this thing is a fork, a spoon, a knife, and everything. You don't have any other utensils. This is it. Of course, when all the meats are made out of processed turkey, it doesn't matter about the cutting. But this is it. It's a little hard, too. The spool is important for this one thing to me. In prison, you only get, you know, everybody has a bathroom here and the toilet paper's in there. You get handed the toilet paper. You have to learn, if you run out and you're still in the bathroom, you're in trouble because there is no toilet paper there. So you learn tricks, you learn you need to keep two. You better hide one somewhere. And now, as an orderly, I got to keep some of my patients, so I was always ahead. But the spool is important to me because it reminds me that I had to deal with probably the worst time of my life with some of these, you know, with a lot of humiliation and a lot of things that everybody else takes for granted. But it's also very important to me to know I survived it and I'm a better person for it. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got to figure out where I am now. I love y'all. I have asked. Damn you, you do that every time. Who did I ask to do the chips? Would you please stand up, Kelly? Kelly is now going to do the chips.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. And Don, I just want to say thank you very much for your story, especially what you said about acceptance. I often forget that today I have a choice. So thank you for that.